It's Wednesday, April 17th, 2024, and you're listening to episode 622 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 37 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Mary.
This is Doug.
And this is Wayne.
All right, so topic for today is one that I am kind of surprised we have never really talked about in a substantive way before, anywhere in the run of the show. I'm sure we've mentioned things related to it, but we've never hit this one head on, which is how do we each as individuals, and we're going to do us because I love you guys and you do some great role playing, but you're not here. But how do we individually take a character and go from a concept to actually bringing that character to life at the table? We've talked a lot about where do game masters get their inspiration? How do you tell good stories? How do you voice NPCs in an interesting way? How do you bring your setting to life? But I don't think we have ever, as a single topic, flipped that question and said, okay, players, you got one character. How do you actually go from your idea and your stats on the page to actually give that character some life and depth and, excuse the repeat of the word, but in a different sense, character? How do you give them personality and presentation? Who wants to go first? Or if you guys are all bashful, I'll go first.
I can go first.
All right.
So for me, one of the first things I do is I look at the character and the backstory that I've given it, and I ask, what is important? What is the most important things to this character? And when I look at the backstory, I look at an event that happens. Let's say...
Can you give me an example? Is there a character you can think of that... Like, what about your character in the Skies of Glass game, the merchant?
Yeah, so in that one, his big thing, what did he care about? He cared about not working on a farm. Anything okay. that got him away from a farm was what was going to be important.
Okay, so a desire for a change in life, okay?
Yes, and that's why he wanted to go into merchant, because that got him away from the farm. It got him traveling.
Okay.
And that was his big motivation. For the current Epoch of Rysos character, his big thing is life, because he was a person that was under the perk level, you know, under the right of what should have been revived.
To explain what the perk level is for anyone not listening to the AP, it means if you're injured seriously, it is a percentage of surviving brain tissue at which they make the rough call of are you likely alive and can be fixed, or would fixing you just really be creating a clone?
Yep. And so he was illegally brought back.
Yeah.
So to him, life is very important because he had that event. And that's what I do, is I look at what are the history of the events. Because an event, the same event, can cause very different reactions in different people. You know, you lose a loved one, for example. That can destroy a person. That can make a person stronger. And so, I look at the characters, like, which direction would be more fun for me to play? What would be better in the group? And that's what I do. I don't look at personality traits as much as what is important to the character. And I look for ways in role play to express what's important. Because the personality traits for me, those come out during play when I'm interacting with the other characters. And then I make notes of them and I try to keep it consistent.
So in the case of what's important to your character, let's take the two examples you gave, which is the merchant and then a perk investigator, or basically someone who determines in questionable cases whether a person is eligible for resuscitating medical yep. care or they're effectively dead and should be allowed to remain as such. But in both cases, what is important to your character figures into what it is they do for a living.
Yes, and what their motivation is. But it also is an area I look at for character development. When I look at the character from the Skies of Glass game,
yeah.
he was someone that didn't want to live on a farm. He didn't want to be settled. He wanted to travel. And then he finds out that he has a daughter. And suddenly his priorities are shaken. What's important is shaken. And that's where his character growth came in, to the point of at the end of the game, he settles down to build his family.
Yeah, he ends up ending the game where he didn't want to be at the start of it.
Yeah.
Except now it's his own idea based on what's changed his life.
Yep. And that was the important thing. Like, what is important to the character at the beginning of the campaign? And then I let the events of the campaign change him and let him grow. Yeah,
that ties into something that I try to do, which is whatever ideas I have for a character, I try to let them come up organically. There was a D&D game I played years back with a guy who had this really obnoxious cleric of some war deity. I don't remember which one. And all this guy would do is he sounded like the world's most shallow and brain-damaged Klingon. Of everything's like, oh, to battle. We're going to fight in battle. I mean, seriously, I'm not exaggerating. This was any given moment a role play.
These are the 80s video game clips of...
Yeah. Like... this, I mean, it was not good. And... it was because of the fact that his interest in conflict was not coming up organically as part of his character arc or role play or whatever. It was being shoehorned in as this irritating, I don't know, repeating chorus, this sort of myopic fixation. I don't know exactly what to call it, a perseveration on that one concept of conflict. And it actually made the character worse. So, Wayne, I'm glad for how you do it of letting this express itself in the natural arc of the game. I mean, it was not the first phrase out of your character's mouth of, well, screw towns, let's stay on the river. Well, okay, we need to go into town. Can't do that. I hate towns. Back to the river.
Yeah, I like to let it inform what they do, not be a catchphrase.
Yeah, not lead you by the nose.
I don't like catchphrases. People have catchphrases sometimes. Most people, though, don't.
Well, and even people who don't have catchphrases, they or do or whatever, they also are not one-trick ponies. And the people we've all met individually who are those one-trick ponies quickly become very annoying.
Yeah. One of the other things that I think I do a little differently, I don't necessarily pick positive and negative traits. I like to look at something about a person and look at what is the good and the bad about that and integrate both. So someone that is...
this is going to dovetail nicely to where Doug's going. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to hit him next. But so can you give me an example of that?
Yeah. So for example, somebody that knows a lot about one particular topic. Let's say I know everything about a certain solar system.
Okay.
Then I will start to look for ways that can make him think wrong about something else. You know, that is his strength if you're dealing with that. But if you're dealing with a different society, he may start to project things onto that because it's what he knows. Right. Someone who is very intelligent in real life, there's a good chance they're depressed in real life because those two things frequently go hand in hand. I like to look at things like that where someone impulsive, for example, they may make a bad choice quickly, but they're also going to make a move quickly. They're not going to stand around and wait and be caught off guard. So I like to have it be both good and bad.
So, Doug, I want to tie this in to what you were telling us before we turned on the mics about your triangle model of personality. Could you talk about that? Because I really like that idea, and it's such a simple, quick one to knock out.
Yeah, I just literally draw a triangle, and I will come up with three personality traits for my character. Mm-hmm. And they can be, like, any kind of personality traits, but I want one that would be considered, like, a good personality trait, one that's kind of neutral, and one that's just bad, okay? So the idea I came up with is you got on one edge of the triangle is loyalty. The guy is really loyal to his friends and his family. Then on another one, I can kind of consider this one a neutral trait. And that's overly honest. He's, I guess, kind of blunt in a way, and he doesn't know when to stop talking. And the last one would be like passive aggressive or something like that. So you got all three of these personality traits that just kind of...
That's my favorite form of aggressive.
You know, yeah. And part of the things that frustrates me is I look at some systems... and they would take all three of those and consider them negative traits you character things back.
You guys came up here while I was still downstairs talking to him, gathering up the computer to bring up here. And I was actually commenting to him that at least in the original Savage Worlds, telling the truth was considered a flaw and would give you character creation points back.
I'm pretty sure there's an optional World of Darkness flaw that will do the same thing.
It's like if I'm not prone to lying all the time. I get to raise two attributes. I'll take it.
Yeah, loyalty is a hindrance as well, because you're loyal and you stick with people. But
I agree with Doug, because let's put mechanics aside, even the soft mechanics, simply in a matter of role play. If I'm another character in Doug's party and he's honest and loyal, I'm going to view those as pretty positive traits. Certainly right. Loyalty. Now, with honesty, he caveated it that maybe at times he's a little overly honest, or maybe he's a little too quick to tell the cops something other than I want my attorney. So, I mean, it might annoy me, but as another player, I would interpret those behaviors in exactly how he described them, a positive, neutral, negative.
Yeah. And it might be my Fate GM in me coming out, because I run so much Dresden Files, which is Fate-based, where all of your aspects are both good and bad. You can use them for an advantage. I can use them against you. That may be why I like so much the idea of having something be both good and bad.
Mm-hmm. Having it exist on the same axis.
Yes.
Mary, what about you?
In a completely, like, I was trying to think, what are some of the more memorable things that I've done for character stuff? I think one of the ones that I've found consistently that helps me really embody a character and, like, bring it out, which is kind of the whole point, is when I'm playing characters that have, like, very different physical makeup to human person sitting at a table.
Yeah.
I will pick something about those traits and, in describing what we're doing, like, make sure that I'm incorporating that difference into the actions. Like, one that comes to mind is I was playing a D&D game where I was playing a basically a halfling tiefling, because we're going back to ancestry, not race. And a lot of times when people would sit down, or if we're around a table or in something, I would specifically describe, I climb up on the table and sit on the table because I am that much shorter than everybody else. And I don't need to bring up the fact that I'm shorter, but I'm going to make it a point to, this is how my character is going to interact, so please don't forget that I'm tiny. It really helped stay in the mindset of somebody who is different, to, like, not incorporate it in what she's saying, but in making sure that everybody understands that what she's doing is just a little bit different.
Yeah, I like that. Taking the quirks of a character and playing those out in the game in a way that isn't overly abrasive, but is just a bit of seasoning in the background of just kind of these neat little things of, you know, you go into the tavern and your character, because of her size, has to sit on the table or a few medieval phone books or whatever it is that she can find. And so it's not something that's like this constant irritating refrain.
Right, right. No, but it is something to help, like, reinforce the idea that you're not looked like, I am not a human person in this game, even though you look across the table and you're looking at a human person.
Yeah, it's about seasoning. Back when we were playing that game, that D&D game under Chad, when I was playing my gnoll, one of the things my gnoll would always do is he was constantly, because he was trying to fit into human society, he was constantly trying to comb out and have his fur bathed, which, of course, for him was a huge undertaking. It's the full body of it, not just a scalp. And I'm also glad that it's something you're choosing to use as seasoning, a spice, not as an entree. Because there are times I've been in role-playing groups where I have seen, or probably been guilty of myself, turning those quirks into the entree.
Like the whole, that becomes the whole character.
Yes, probably the one I can think of most recently. I talked some episodes back about having actually found some decent role-play in an MMO, which to me is anathemic and unheard of. But you know what? I got to give the devil his due. When it's there, it's there. And I actually found a Final Fantasy XIV server that has some, if you're willing to do the work to find it, some pretty good role-playing going on in there. And for a while, I ran with a couple of those guilds before eventually we started our own. And I remember that one of the things that invariably, in the couple of guilds that I was in during this time, if someone had a character that was of a pseudo-feline or feline species, that they would always, like, whenever anything RP was going on, they would always have to go to a high place in the room where a character wasn't even really supposed to be, then sit cross-legged there with, like, their chin on their hands, like they're a perched cat watching everything, and they're all brooding and whatever, and mysterious, and, ooh, what are they thinking? Who knows, because they're so quiet. And it didn't bother me that was an aspect of their characters. That was the character.
Right.
And I went into this bit of impotent fury because I saw an ad for the current original EverQuest expansion. And I can't remember what it's called, but it's something about songs or bards or some such crap. And in that picture is a cat doing the exact same thing I'm talking about. It's some kind of cat person. I don't remember what they're called. It's been too long since I played EverQuest or EverQuest 2, but their cat species is doing exactly that. It's sitting in a bar listening to a bard play up on top of a table, which has like a beer keg on it, sitting legs folded in that exact pose. And I'm like, damn it. Can you people either A, have some originality, or B, at least push this back from center view?
As somebody who has played more than one cat girl, because, you know, the last one was a Star Wars character.
Girls, right?
The Tigorians, they're tiger people. But one of the things that I would do all the time is, instead of just reacting, I would describe ear twitches. Like, you know, or other like ticks that you wouldn't like, you know, her tail starts to twitch and you notice this because that's not usual. Something's wrong. But it's not the sitting in a corner alone. She's a part of the conversation. It's just this added aspect to the reaction or the conversation.
It's kind of funny. I'll move on from this topic, I promise. But it was kind of funny because in one of those interactions I had in Final Fantasy, and I was relatively new to the guild, and one of the characters kept doing that. Their cat, boy, cat, girl, whatever it was, kept going to the far side of the room and sitting in these really high, out-of-the-way places and doing their little broody pose and whatever. And in the middle of whatever the heck was going on, whatever event, I just stopped and had my character like walk over to them and have a really long, concerned conversation. Like, are you okay? Because I always notice you kind of hiding yourself away. Like, are you feeling all right?
One of my biggest pet peeves for a player is when they come into a game, they have their character fully defined, and no matter what happens throughout the game, the character that leaves at the end of the campaign is the exact same character that came in, because that's what they created.
Yeah.
That the events of the campaign do not change the character in any way, and they don't grow or re-examine.
I think there's an attitude there you have to walk into the game with, which is you have to start off with the understanding that my character is mutable. Things will change in this character. Maybe I don't know what they are. Maybe I have some ideas. But I have to be honest with myself about the fact that you imagine a real character who fits these attributes, and I don't mean literal attributes, I mean traits, that is existing in this world going through these events. It's always on the table. That could change them quite radically.
Well, and one of the things that I've had to struggle with, and I don't always succeed, but one of the things that I've found problematic in the same sort of vein is not necessarily that that character doesn't change at all. It's that their own internal conflict was always so internal that none of it ever hit the table.
Never gets expressed. Yeah.
That is an issue with multiple characters I've seen over the course of role playing, mm-hmm. where you will have a character that is actually super deep and they will seem super shallow at the table because everything going on is inside their head.
There's actually a character that Chad accurately and correctly talked me out of playing because he was familiar with the character and is like, Dan, it's going to be a great character except for the fact that no one but you will have any idea what's going on with the character. You will be playing purely in your own mind's eye. Like, if that's what you want out of the game, go for it, because it's not an abrasive, disruptive character.
Right.
But this character is going to only be experienced by you. And I'm like, yeah, that's a good point. Bad character concept. I pitched it.
I don't think I've ever created a character like that, but I've seen multiple ones like that at the table, mm-hmm. where their motivation for doing things is just nobody has a clue because it's all in their head.
Yeah, or secrets so secret that we're never going to let them come out. Even though that would be character development, but no, that can't happen.
So, okay, I'm going to give one, or actually two here, that I think fit in pretty well with what we're talking about. The first one is with all of my characters, I make sure that they have at least one trait, skill, perk, whatever it is in that system, that represents either a hobby or something that is off topic from the primary thrust of the game. So, for example, let's say we're playing D&D and I make fighter or warrior or whatever. And I decide that, okay, this character's background is he used to work as a guard on a boat. And so as a result, he knows something about sailing. He really loves the open sea. You know, feels kind of claustrophobic on land. Not going to make this a one note to the character, but it's something that represents the fact that this character is more than a single-minded machine, that this character actually has interests outside of the main flow of the game that may or may not even come up. I mean, it could come up in conversation. It could come up in a plot point of, say, we suddenly find ourselves in a port city. But if nothing else, it just gives me a sense that this character is a real person that does something when they're not on the clock, that they exist outside of their race class combo.
Yeah, when I have extra skills or things to that nature, or even if I don't, I will sacrifice some sometimes just to do. I had a druid once who took wood carving like as a craft skill for no other reason except it was a thing I wanted to be able to do when there was downtime, and it gave her something to focus on and something to bring to the table that wasn't just, I have animals.
I don't think you've ever really gotten it right until you've played a druid with dryad carving as a skill.
Oh, I never thought about that. Although live oak being a whole spell, yeah. That could, yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just go around with your bunch of hooks and knives and treants running every which way to try and get out of the grove before you turn them into like a napkin holder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the things I always like to try to do, and I usually fail at it, is I like to take something skill-wise in the game that I don't have and start trying to learn it from one of the other characters.
Oh, pick a growth path. There you go. Yeah. And don't lock into it, but at least have an idea of at the start of the game. And when I want to interrupt you for a second, just because something that we have not talked about, I don't think in a while, is the characters auto-existed in continuity. They did not spring from the earth at the start of the game, unless that's the concept of the game. They were something before the first moment of the game, and they're something when they're not in the spotlight. They have hopes, dreams, ambitions, fears, whatever. What are those things? And a growth path, maybe it will play out in the game, maybe it won't. Some games are more friendly to this than others. Some games have built-in project clock mechanics and things like that. But having the sense that your character exists in continuity and is not just ripped out non sequitur and dumped into a moment, I think is a huge advantage to a character. But I'm sorry, continue.
Yeah, like if I were in a game with you and you had that skill of wood carving, I might try to learn it.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's say you had it at a level 3, I might take it as a level 1 because it's something that I found interesting throughout the course of traveling with you, that I learned just enough about it to have some knowledge because it was interesting. Or maybe we're doing a lot of fighting and I don't really know how to shoot a gun, but your character is really good at shooting guns. I'm going to go, instead of just taking a gun skill when I advance, I'm going to go and ask for help and ask for one of the other characters to teach as a way to try to not just role play with the other players at the table, but I like to explain why I get new skills.
Yeah, and it does a lot of times lead to good roleplay, or even if your roleplay isn't centered around the thing that you're sitting, like your character coming up and being like, hey, what are you doing and how do you do it? Even if the roleplay itself isn't centered around wood carving, it's a conversation that you're having and it leads to a lot of more interactions.
And it's something you can easily throw in. You and I are sitting around a campfire and we're talking and you just mention that that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
And now that has been expressed that that character has that interest.
All right, so I don't know if this is a mental quirk or I'm about to throw myself on a cringe grenade, probably both. But has anyone else here other than me practiced their character?
Yeah.
Okay.
You mean like,
to varying degrees of success.
Yeah, okay. Yes to Mary, sort of yes to Doug. So to explain what I mean, I'm not talking about like I go to McDonald's and order in my character's voice. I don't mean anything that bad. This is not a Black Leaf moment or whatever. As embarrassing of a confession as this is going to be, please don't take it to be worse than it actually is. It's not like every time I show up at my parents' house, I'm trying out a new D&D character and my parents have to deal with this crap. But yeah, Doug's laughing.
He's literally wearing a different hat.
Yeah, I show up suddenly like wizard robes, and today I'm like Blastor, and you just have to deal with that. That Blastor's going to have opinions on the chicken casserole.
We have turned Thanksgiving into a LARP, and you're going to deal with it.
I'm sorry, but when I worked out on a calendar, the chaotic evil one's there for Christmas, so you just have to work around this. So I don't mean that. It's not that bad, but I just mean like, like you're on your way to the game and you're sort of trying to get yourself in character. And so you just say a phrase or two in your character's cadence or voice or whatever. Or maybe you kind of see you're contemplating a situation like in a book. It's like, wow, what would my character do if he, she was there? I mean, it's not like some kind of weird psychotic obsession, but I just mean like a one-off thing because it just sort of helps me rehearse the character to get into their head, to kind of see how they would see things. And I want to say small doses here. I realize it's still kind of cringe, but I find it helps me, especially the weirder the character is. I find it helps me.
I do that as a GM. I don't do it as a player. As a player, what I do instead is I look back on what I just did in the session, and I think, was that in character for them?
So I prepare myself, you berate yourself.
Well, no, it's not berating. It's, I ask, let's say I have a pacifist character, and suddenly he lashed out and punched somebody.
Okay.
I don't say, well, I was out of character there. I instead say, okay, what caused him in that instant to do that? And I start going through what was going on in his mind in that moment. I don't say I did something out of character. I say, why was that in character when it didn't seem to be? And I let that help me develop my character sometimes.
Yeah, where I've realized it goes too far is like when, again, not too far, but when practicing beforehand gets unhelpful is when I started imagine interactions with other characters or things that might happen in the game and then play through them. And then either it never happens that way and therefore can't like use that aspect of what I just thought of, or it already happened in my head, so why bother doing it in the game? That's a problematic part of that. But toning that back to thinking of something to latch onto in a character that can get me thinking about something the way that the character would, like having one very distinct thought pattern and bringing that to mind before game can be very helpful.
I think the reason I don't do it goes back to my very first campaign, which was Skies of Glass game. Chad and I were working together. We would sit next to each other, and during the week we would talk about our characters and the game. And I remember we were talking about ways we wanted our characters to grow and a conversation we wanted to have. And we talked out why they would approach each other, why they would have this conversation. And we basically prepped it and we sat down at the table. And it was the most awkward, horrible role-playing I've ever had. And it's so ingrained in my head that I shouldn't plan things ahead as a player that I think I had this aversion to doing something like that because the one time I did, it just was so bad.
Yeah.
And I don't think it has to be. It was, so it's my baggage that I carry into games.
What I have found works for me is to contemplate the character in much the same way that I contemplate real life, though admittedly with obviously a much smaller scale and a whole lot less emotional investment. Because my character has a bad day, I'll take that over me having a bad day any day of the week, especially some of the things that have happened to my characters. But I don't view my characters as a fixed path, that they're here and I want them to end up here. They're going to end up here. When you're kind of describing that with rehearsing scenes, another place we've seen this is there's someone we regularly game with who always wants his characters to be redeemed and then makes them irredeemable. I don't look at it that way. I try to look at it as like when I wake up in the morning in real life, you know, I contemplate the day and say, okay, well, I know I got to go to work, so I set up my laptop. And, you know, if I'm going to go somewhere, it might be cold outside, so I grab a coat. I think about it in these possibilities. I know I've got a review today, and here's what they're likely to say. So I start to think through these possible answers that I could give to questions that they are likely to raise. And the same way, when I make a character, I try to have a sense of here are the different character arcs or plot lines or whatever that this character might latch on to, that they might pursue, the ambitions and goals that they have. But I always see them the same way that I recommend game mastering, which is I treat this as a buffet of ideas where I'm accepting some of them are not going to work and some of them might work but will simply not come up or will not be sufficiently interesting. And maybe this leads to a second point, that anyone else at the table will care. And so it's really not contributing to the storytelling in a meaningful way. And so these are just possibilities. These are not fixed, written in stone ways that my character must go. Otherwise, I have no future here. Because it's like real life. You wake up in the morning, you prepare for possibilities, you contemplate what might happen, you run scenarios through your head to some degree, but you also have to improv it when something happens you don't expect, because something will happen you don't expect.
So does anyone else use other creative endeavors as ways to get inside the head of your character?
No, and I have a specific reason for it, but I think it's a great idea. So please continue.
Yeah, I'm curious as a duck had an answer.
I oftentimes base my characters off of a character in a book or a movie and stuff. And so what I'll do is I'll maybe, like, if it's based off of Han Solo, I'll be watching Star Wars before the game.
I can see that.
You also do that, though, Doug, with history. You make characters that are based off of real people, at least to some extent. Or you take attributes of those real people.
Sure. I guess. I don't
know. Like, I'm thinking particularly you've had some of your characters draw attribute from, like, martial arts masters from the past. Oh, okay. You just draw character traits from them or something. Or events from their life or something like that.
Or
that,
setting, like the Appalachian law. You know what I mean? Stubbs but I McGee. Lost all the words there. Sorry.
I've definitely done that, too. I've had book series where I have read the series. I absolutely loved them. And then taken a personality trait or a name out of it and used it in a character.
I've had instances where I will do that, have a memorable character, go back 13 years later, read a book that I read a long time ago and go, oh, that's where I stole that from. Forgot that I stole that.
Yeah. So something that I do as a GM frequently is I will write fiction about NPCs that are in the games. I will write short stories. I've done it with characters when I'm a player, but for some reason I don't do that very often. Instead of it being something that I've done around characters to help get into character, it's been characters that I've just loved so much that I've then wanted to take into other things.
So is that a thing that I have done or contemplated doing? My short answer is yes, though not with that many characters. There have been a couple characters that I found fascinating enough that I wanted to explore their mind, their lives, their ideas in a way that was not necessarily occurring at the table. Or maybe that campaign had ended and I just wanted to keep telling the story.
That's more my experience. Yeah. A lot of the characters I do that with are ones where the game either ended prematurely or I didn't feel like I got to go where I wanted to with the character, and I'll do short fiction or something afterwards.
But I have done some of that pre or mid game to get a sense of the character. I try not to develop it too much, because it tends to solidify the character in my mind to the point that the character then becomes less
malleable.
Yes, they become a lot less malleable in the game.
Well, you risk character development outside the game that then has nothing to do with the game, but now you've developed this aspect of a character. Yeah, that,
and now suddenly I'm a setting lawyer for my own character.
Yeah.
And tell him, no, it didn't happen that way in his life, blah, blah, blah. But the other reason I don't tend to do it that often is because I GM a whole lot more than I play. And so there may be characters that I like, NPCs, enemies, whatever, but to develop them in other forms of media while the game is going on would be to give away chunks of the story to my players. And so that's the main reason I don't do it all that often.
Well, and I'll do it sometimes and not give it to anyone. I will just write it for myself. Oh, yeah.
For heaven's sake, as someone who game masters, please do not give me a damn short story.
Yeah, no, I will write it for myself. Because then those NPCs feel more real to me.
Yeah.
And I can better figure out what their motivation is.
I can definitely see that working better with NPCs than PCs, because you have less focus on them in character development in the game anyway. So if you can, like, get into that space a little bit more, and it doesn't matter so much that development is happening off screen, as it were, then I can see that being really useful.
Where I've done it with one of my player characters will typically be a prequel. It will be something where it's not what's going on in the game right now. Something will happen in game. I'll make a comment about, you know, an event that happened. This is the ship that made the castle run. And then I will go write that story. So I then am consistent with myself character.
So as development occurs, or as you improv things, you go back and give them details.
And just flesh it out.
Yeah. So way I can bring it up again later and have more information for it.
I think you could make it work with a pregame bit of fiction. If you did one thing, maybe two, which is, first of all, not to be too sold on your own story, because when you hit the game, the character may not develop the way you expected. People may not react to the character the way you want. Because in your fiction, you control 100% of the world.
Right.
When you play the game, if you're a player, you control one character. But I think the other thing that I would do, and I think I actually did do the one time I wrote pregame fiction for a character, was I put a gap in there. That there was a gap at the end of the story. So it was like, okay, here's a little bit of short fiction about their life leading toward the game. But then there was about a 1 to 3 year gap before the game begins. So if something is said that contradicts what I wrote, well, instead of contradict, it becomes a modifier to it. So I just have to kind of both and it of, well, I have here that I was primarily a spacefaring character who lived on space stations, but now for some reason in the game, it's important I've been from a planet. Okay, well, maybe that was where I started in the, before I went to space, or I came back from space, and despite missing it so much, I spent the past 3 years as a farmer on some world or whatever. And so I can kind of both and my own work as opposed to throwing it out. All right, I think that's where we're going to leave this one. I don't think there's going to be a whole lot in the show notes outside of time marks. One thing to keep an eye on is Fear the Con 2024. That is still a thing. We have the dates reserved for it. We got the location reserved for it. So if you want to get that on your calendar, which I know you do, that's going to be June 2024. The 20th through the 22nd will be Fear the Con. I don't know what number. So
we quit numbering them and we started putting them by year because we didn't want to track the numbers anymore.
Yeah, and then there's some in-house debate as to whether the online ones are numbered or not numbered. And was DrewCon numbered or not numbered? And we don't know. We've lost the plot like everyone else in life.
Fear the Con 2024.
Yeah, Fear the Con 2024. We're doing
that. If you look at the Kickstarters, you will notice that they started using year. And that was exactly why I switched to year, because I didn't want to figure out numbers.
Yeah. So anyway, thank you guys for tuning in. Have a great week and great games, and we will catch you next time. This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2024. Listeners are free to use this episode in a non-commercial endeavor, so long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. If you wish to support this show and its related endeavors, you can do so at patreon.com/feartheboot.